The Outlaws and the Hidden Treasure.
"I'm going to be a millionaire when I grow up," announced William to the outlaws. "I'll divide it with you three. We'll all be millionaires."
The interest of the others became less impersonal. Then Henry said, "How are we going to start getting the money?" William looked at him rather coldly.
"Oh, there's hundreds of ways of getting to be millionaires. There's...
Then a flash of inspiration.
"There's finding hidden treasure. Why, when you think what a lot of pirates and smugglers there must have been, the earth must be full of hidden treasure, if you know where to dig, and if you've got a map."
They scuffled joyfully homewards down the lane, playing their game in which the sole object was to push someone else into the ditch. William was neatly precipitated into it by a combined attack from Ginger and Douglas. Then they saw William sit up and take something from the hedge.
"What is it?"
"Bird's nest." He was frowning thoughtfully. From among the moss and feathers he had taken a small piece of crumpled paper. He spread it out.
"Crumbs!" he breathed. "It's a map of hidden treasure."
They all tumbled down into the ditch with him. The piece of paper was crumpled, but the markings on it were quite plain. There were two circles. Under one were the words Copper Beach, and under the other the word Cedar. And between the two circles, in the centre, was a large cross. At the bottom of the paper was written, PM 710.
"It's a map," said William. "Look at it, all yellow and old. I expect the pirate what made it just threw it into the hedge when they were taking him off to prison, and it's been here ever since. The cross is where the treasure is, of course."
"I say," said Henry, "there's a copper beech and a cedar tree in Miss Peach's garden. He must have buried it in Miss Peach's garden."
"Right," said William. "We've got to find the exact spot and dig for it. I bet it's not as easy as it looks. He must have put some catch in it, so's if anyone who wasn't his mother or wife found the map, they wouldn't be able to get hold of the treasure."
"What does PM 710 mean?" said Ginger.
"I guess that's the catch," said William gloomily.
"There were witches in those days, you know," said Henry, "and I bet they used to get witches to put spells on maps of hidden treasure, so's only the people they meant to find 'em could find 'em."
"Yes," agreed William. "PM 710, that's the spell. It means 7:10 in the evening. It means you'll only find it if you dig for it at 7:10. That's it."
They met outside the gate of Miss Peach's house a little before 7:10 that evening, armed with various implements. Exactly between the copper beech and the cedar was a rose bed, which would considerably facilitate digging operations. They advanced cautiously across the lawn. But Miss Peach, prim and middle-aged, was sitting writing at a desk at a window that overlooked the lawn. They returned to the road.
"We'll just have to wait till she's not there," said William philosophically. "It doesn't matter which day we do it, so long as it's 7:10.
There followed a week of daily disappointment.
"We've got to get her away somehow," said William. "Get her away by 7:10 one day, so's we can go and find the treasure. We'll have to find out the sort of things she's interested in." "It's dreams she's interested in," said Douglas. "She writes about 'em in a magazine. I know, because I heard my mother talking about her the other day. And she's most interested in people who have real dreams or something."
"All right," said William. "Then we'd better start having real dreams."
The next afternoon, when Miss Peach emerged from her gate as usual at 2:30, four boys were standing there. She could not help noticing that one of them gave a violent start of surprise and pointed her out to the others.
"What is the matter, little boys?" she said sharply. Is there anything strange about me?"
Oh, no, said one of them hastily. "Oh, no. It's only that I dreamed about you last night, and I was so surprised to see you coming out of the gate, because I didn't know you were a real person. I thought you were only in a dream."
"I'm sorry," ended the ingenuous child smugly, "if I was rude."
"Oh, no, not at all. This is most interesting. Am I, exactly like the lady in your dream?"
"Exactly," said the boy earnestly. "But in my dream, you hadn't got a coat on. You got a sort of black dress with blue on it."
"Oh, but how amazing. I've got a dress like that. I was wearing it last night. Do tell me, where was I in your dream? Oh, wait a minute."
And she took out her notebook.
"You were in a sort of room," said William slowly. "There was a sort of writing table at the window, and bookcases all round the room, and there was a sort of big blue pot umbrella stand in a corner of the room."
"A Nankin vase, dear," said Miss Peach, as she scribbled hard in her little notebook. "Oh, but it's all most amazing. One of the most wonderful pieces of material that's ever come my way. Now, what was I doing in your dream?"
"You were writing at the table," said William, "and you put your pen in a sort of big silver inkpot."
"Oh, yes, yes, that was presented to me, dear boy, by the members of a little society I was once president of, a little society for the interpretation of dreams. It has always been a great treasure to me. I could not work at all without it. If it were not in its place, there on my writing table, I should not, I'm quite sure, be able to carry on my wonderful work at all. Now, what did I do next, dear boy?"
But it was at this point that the outlaws had left their point of vantage near Miss Peach's window to go home to bed.
"I woke up," said William simply.
"Oh, dear, dear, never mind." She closed her notebook. "Now, I want you to come to me tomorrow and tell me exactly what you dreamed tonight. This is all most valuable material for me. It will form the basis of my next article."
"The thing to do," said William after she had gone, "is to take away her inkstand. Then she won't be able to write, so perhaps she'll go out."
So they crept through the bushes and snatched the inkstand from the table that stood at the open window. But even this daring step was not successful. True, Miss Peach did not write, but neither did she go out. She sat in her study, ringing up the police station every 5 minutes to ask if they'd had any news of her inkstand yet, and receiving messages of condolence from her friends. William went to Miss Peach the next morning and described a dream in which Miss Peach busied herself continually with the telephone and wept and wrung her hands.
"Oh, dear boy," she said, "I really feel that perhaps you might dream where my dear inkstand is. Now, before you go to sleep tonight, you must concentrate on where my dear inkstand is."
"Where are you going to dream she found it?" asked Henry.
"I know," said William. "Mr. Popplestone's house. I know she knows him, because I saw him talking in the road, and I know what his study's like, because once I was in it with Father."
Miss Peach listened to William's dream open-mouthed.
"Ah, it's simply amazing. You say that in your dream you saw me going into Mr. Popplestone's study?"
"Yes, and it was just 7:10 by the clock on the mantelpiece."
"And I went to the cupboard in the wall and opened it?"
"Yes."
"And I found my beloved silver inkstand in it?"
"Yes, and found your beloved silver inkstand in it."
"And did you, in your dream, infer that he'd taken it?"
Yes, said William. Yes, that's how it seemed to me. It seemed to me as if he'd taken it."
"Well, I'd have said that he was the last person in the world to do a thing like that. But his hobby of bird study, it may be a blind to cover his secret career. However, you said that the time by the clock was 7:10.
"Yes," said William emphatically. 7:10.
Concealed in the bushes, the outlaws watched Miss Peach set off from her house. Then they crept forth onto the lawn. Outside in the road was the wheelbarrow that they'd brought to take the treasure home. They carried their spades and shovels. William also carried the silver inkstand, which was to be slipped back onto Miss Peach's study table as soon as the treasure was found. They stood solemnly by the rosebed, and William took out the map.
"Here it is. And we can see the church clock, so the minute it gets to 7:10, we'll start digging."
Socrates Popplestone sat at his desk in his study. He had spent an enjoyable day watching a couple of whitethroats, and had sat down with the intention of writing up his notes. But he wasn't writing up his notes. He was thinking about Miss Peach. In fact, lately he'd begun to feel quite sentimental about Miss Peach. He'd picked up a glove that she'd left in church last Sunday and was, well, treasuring it. He roused himself to begin his bird notes. And then a most amazing thing happened. The door opened and Miss Peach walked in. She said with dramatic quietness,
"Mr. Popplestone, you know what I've come for. I know you took it."
A flush of guilt dyed Mr. Popplestone's cheek. His hand went to the pocket where he was carrying her glove.
"Did the verger tell you?" he asked.
He'd had a suspicion all along that the verger had seen him take it.
No, she said in a voice of horror. I'd no idea that he was a party to it. Why did you take it?
Because it belonged to you, he replied.
She stared at him in amazement.
I've been carrying it about all day, next my heart, he went on.
Next your heart? Did you take the ink out of it first?
I never noticed any ink in it.
But you couldn't carry it about all day next your heart. It's too big.
Too big, he said tenderly. If it fits your hand, it can't be very big.
But I never put my whole hand into it. Oh, but I know where it is. A supernatural manifestation has been vouchsafed to me through a little child.
She walked over to the cupboard in the wall and flung it open. In it reposed a small pile of notebooks and a bottle of cough mixture. Miss Peach looked taken aback, but then pointed an accusing finger at Mr. Popplestone and said sternly, "Where is it?"
"Here,"
said the guilty man. With hanging head, he brought out a crumpled white glove from his waistcoat pocket.
What's that?
Your glove. I took it on Sunday. I thought you said you'd come for it.
Oh, I feel rather faint, Mr. Popplestone.
Please call me Socrates,
he said, as he dashed wildly to the cupboard and got out the bottle of cough mixture to restore her.
Certainly, murmured Miss Peach. And will you call me Victoria?
Then, first making sure that they were ready to receive her, she fainted into his arms. The betrothed pair entered the gate of Miss Peach's house. They'd agreed to be married very quietly early the next year.
You want looking after, Socrates, dearest, said Miss Peach fondly. Oh, good gracious!
They had turned the corner of the house, and there on the lawn were four boys engaged in digging up the rose bed.
Good gracious, she repeated. It's the one that has dreams, too. Boys, what are you doing?
William had seen her, and with commendable presence of mind had thrust the silver inkstand into the hole, covering it lightly with soil. He turned to her.
I've had another dream. I fell asleep, and I dreamed that I dug up this bed and found your inkpot, so I came straight along to try. Ah, I believe I've got to it at last. Yes, here it is.
Oh, how wonderful, breathed Miss Peach.
She turned to her fiancé.
There, you doubted the boy's veracity when I told you about him, but isn't this proof? And such a dear boy.
Mr. Popplestone looked at William. Then he put a half-crown into William's hand, a sort of thank-offering to fate. The next day, William and Ginger slipped quietly into William's mother's drawing-room, where visitors were being entertained. They intended to hand round the cake-stand, and, with a skill born of long practice, to abstract enough cakes from it for themselves and for Douglas and Henry, who waited outside. There was still lots of time to get the treasure. They knew where it was, anyway. The map was still in William's pocket. A woman with red hair was saying,
Peggy Marsden told me to take down the date so that I shouldn't forget her birthday, and I did, but I lost the bit of paper. Trixie says it's the 7th of October. I remember now, I put down PM 7:10 on a bit of paper to remind me. It was the bit of paper I'd begun to design Gladys and John's new garden on. I'd only just begun. I'd given them a copper beech and a cedar tree and a sundial just between them, and then Peggy came in and I made a note of her birthday on the paper and then lost it.
William and Ginger crept brokenly out of the room. Brokenly, they told the other two of the ruin of their hopes. The four of them gazed sadly into the distance, watching their millionaire life vanish into thin air. Then William took the half-crown from his pocket.
Well, he said, it's enough for one ice cream and ginger beer for us all, anyway.
It wasn't much to salvage from the wreck of their fortunes, but it was something.